Hello out there. Thanks for listening to Chasing Sound. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who've been listening and supporting us for 50 episodes. This is our 51st episode, so we hope to make 50 more for you. And we'd also love your feedback. If you've been listening and you have comments, feel free to share them. There's comments on there, good, bad, indifferent. Fire away. We'd love to hear your comments. I want to wish you happy Earth Day. That's coming up shortly. We recorded this the week before Earth Day, so it's coming up this weekend. And also, I wanted to invite those of you who are listening in the Austin area that I invite you to come out to the Hope Farmers Market at the Saltillo Plaza in East Austin on Sunday, April 23rd in the morning from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And check out Kirk and I. We're going to be playing one of our duo sets with maybe some drop-ins from friends. And it'll be a celebration of Earth Day, so you get to hear me talk about what the earth means to me. Well, it means everything. And I'm going to try to read some poems of mine own and others. So I'm going to get a little earthy for everybody down there. And mostly be there to support the local farmers market, the farmers that make organic produce that's yummy and we can all enjoy. Today's episode is with the Kraken Quartet. I met Sean Harvey, who you'll hear a lot in this episode, when I was playing a gig for the Church of the Friendly Ghost recently. And he played a bunch of percussion. We got to know each other because when you play a bunch of percussion, you're the first person in to whatever rehearsal space, which happened to be my home. So I met Sean as he was carrying multiple large pitch percussion instruments like a vibraphone and a marimba. So into the house and setting them up, which is a feat unto itself. And he was a great musician then. He is now. We had a good time hanging out. Great hang. So I was really excited when I heard about his projects and that he's trying something new with the percussion ensemble idea and trying to break down some barriers with that. One half of the Kraken Quartet stuck around after the talk and jammed on some toy bells that I use for teaching in my studio. And we recorded a loop of some percussion and bells, and then they played along while we sort of jammed over it. So I hope you enjoy that first the first jam we have here. And then we've got a great talk with three members of the Kraken Quartet. And at the end, we're going to give you a preview of their new album, Separate Migrate, which will be in stores April 28th. And you could pre-order on Bandcamp. So here's the jam, which we have titled Mel's Bells, after my lovely wife, Melanie. All right, enjoy the jam. Enjoy the talk. Enjoy the show. Here we go. Thank you. welcome to episode 51 of Chasing Sound. I'm Andrew.
This is Kirk.
I'm Chris.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Taylor, and we are members of the Kraken Quartet.
Yeah, so we got the Kraken Quartet in the house. What's Kraken?
How many members total? Is there four?
Yeah, four.
Okay, so tell us a little bit, before we get into the regular interview, tell us a little bit about the project. Andrew and I are pretty familiar with you guys at this point, but for anyone who doesn't know you guys, can we give just a quick breakdown of the setup and where you're at musically?
Yeah, we're essentially a four-piece percussion band. We kind of started out as a traditional percussion ensemble, you know, playing lit by friends of ours, composers, and things like that. And then we kind of started writing our own thing. And now we have a fixed setup where we have, you know, two drum sets, marimba, vibes run through processing, a bunch of synthesizers. And we pretty much stick to just writing our own stuff. We once in a while collaborate with composers, but yeah, right now we're just kind of hanging in our setup and writing our own tunes.
Cool. So you guys are incorporating a little bit of keyboard action in there too, if I remember correctly from the YouTube videos I watched.
Yeah, we have probably three analog synthesizers on stage and one Nord keyboard.
Yeah, cool. So when you guys were getting this going, how long is it, like 3 or 4 years now? Or
It's about to be 5 years, okay, actually. Very cool. There was a time off in the middle of that, but
were you listening to stuff as a group, thinking like, yeah, there should be more stuff like this? Or were there any percussion-heavy bands that were... I can't think of that many. Like Liquid would be the one band from the No Wave era that was two percussionists and a bass player. And I think of that as my favorite like percussion heavy thing. And then that group, Holy Fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but they're very percussion centric. But there aren't a lot of bands that do that. Were you guys into certain artists that bonded you?
Well, so I think in the beginning when we were just, you know, like Taylor said, we were starting out writing our own. We were playing just percussion ensemble music, and one day someone was like, what if we just tried writing our own tunes? You know what I mean? And there were some early pieces of music and that kind of inspired us. We were playing some music at the time by a composer named Jason Truding, and he has a lot of freeform, instead of just writing notes on a page, it'll be like, here's a melody, and here's, like, rhythmic content, and here's some harmony, and just, like, figure out your own instrumentation, you know? That's that kind of got the collaboration juices flowing a little bit at first, you know? That kind of got us to all be in a headspace of, like, cool, I'm gonna play it on this instrument, I'm gonna play it on that instrument, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, you know? And then from there, kind of, we ended up just taking previous interests of music and deciding to just write from there, you know. But that kind of started as like the catalyst for us to collaborate and feel comfortable composing, I think.
That's interesting. Like I imagine that you've got a layer melody, or do you picture these things as harmonies but just played out by percussive devices? Like, or do you see things as like, this is sort of a vocal line that I'm going to hammer out with percussion?
I think it takes a lot of forms. More often than not, I think when we're piecing together a song, we really look at each layer as these interlocking parts. We're a lot more interested in what texture you could create with four or five pitch instruments playing very simple things at once, and that creating the whole, rather than less often we'll have one instrument really singing on top.
Yeah.
And when we do, it's normally for either just a short period of time and then something else takes over, or it'll be there for a while, but the texture is constantly changing under it. So it's definitely more about separate things happening and working together to create the texture.
It's a very pleasing sound. It reminds me of some of the Frank Zappa stuff that was like more percussion heavy, I guess. And it's, you know, a lot of people say that songs have to be built from the ground up to be really good. You know, you have to start from this percussion, and I love the idea of like, let's just start and end it with percussion. So I know one of you has to go relatively soon, so we want to jump into our favorite part of the show, which is the musical timeline. And the first question in that series is, you know, the first song that touched you emotionally as a child? Were you like, oh, that's music? Like, I love music. So we'll take it whichever direction we want to start in, but give us as honest an answer as you can.
Oh, boy, that's
there's
tough.
No shame here. People have mentioned Boys to Men.
Yep.
Like, yeah. There, yeah.
Well, if there's no shame, then I got to go with my man Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah.
And, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Oh, beautiful.
I remember,
Jerry.
Yeah, just being in my my father's car, like, as a child. And he had this CD, it was like a VH1 live CD of Meatloaf.
Oh, the storyteller thing.
Yeah, that was it, right. And I just remember, like, that was, like, one of the first songs I remember just being like, man, this is pretty cool. Like, this is
such a powerful
voice. This
kind of
hits me down here, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, a lot of Meatloaf. I remember maybe Third Eye Blind, Jumper. That was another, like, radio hit, like, when I was young. That was, like, that's cool.
Did your parents have much of a collection of records or tapes or anything?
They had a decent collection. They're non-musicians. Mm-hmm. They, you know, a lot of classic rock, a lot of just kind of what was on the radio at the time.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
That was kind of my exposure at a young age. So.
Yeah. What about you, sir?
So, I remember, I didn't have exactly emotional connection to these things, but my first musical memory was, like, going to see the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, yeah.
When I was, like...
Awesome.
I was, like, 6 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. Maybe it was a self-titled record. That was, like, the one that, like, everyone, like, really knew and whatever. I remember going to see them. I lived in, like, Kingwood, Texas at the time.
Okay.
And, like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My parents lived there.
Oh, yeah. I lived there only for, like, 2 years really young, so, like, I barely remember it. But, like, I remember going to see the Backstreet Boys when we lived in Kingwood. And,
like, you went into, where did they play at? Like,
it was just, like, I mean, it was, like, whatever's comparable to, like, the 360 Amphitheater in town.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It was some massive thing, yeah. And we were, like, on a lawn, and I just remember, like, a bunch of neighbors, like, going, and I was, like, what is this thing I'm doing? Like, I didn't remember at the time, that was, like, my first, like, experience at, like, a massive concert.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I will say about, like, the most connected I ever was to a,
this fucking cat.
Sorry. The most...
This is Magnolia, the
Magnolia.
Chasing Sound kitty cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry she's in here.
No worries.
I pulled down the baby gate to get all these chairs in.
Yeah.
Now, you know, now she's
so, yeah, what was the song you were about
sorry.
To mention, though?
Well, not as much a song, but I remember just the whole record Tommy by The Who.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That... I know my mom especially loved The Who, and that record came out when she was really young growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And just at some point I got, like, a very early MP3 player, and somehow that record, like, found its way onto my MP3 player.
Okay.
Probably by her doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I listened to that whole record a lot. I especially remember, like, in, like, 5th or 6th grade or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Did she buy you the MP3 player?
I think my dad did, but
yeah.
I think
isn't
she
crazy?
Probably
those
was.
Those things
the
were
one
like
that...
$200 and it held like 5 albums or something.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's really crazy.
It's so archaic.
Yeah.
But Tommy would be one of my early connectors.
And definitely, like,
uh-oh.
I always connected to, like, instrumental stuff, like,
mm-hmm.
a lot more. So there's the whole, like, Sparks and The Journey, and there's, like, that track in the middle where it's just, like, this huge,
uh-huh.
like, there are all those musical interludes on that album
uh-huh.
that are, like,
yeah.
dum, dum,
even the vocal tracks have those long spaces.
Yeah, totally.
And Pete Townsend just lets chords ring out, which people forget to do all the time, just leaving huge space in between chords.
And definitely for me, as, like, growing up as a drummer, like, being really into, like, it was all chords and then Keith Moon just, like, going apeshit on the drums in those huge spaces. And I, like, that was the first time, especially as a drummer, where I was like, what is that guy doing? I have to, like, figure that out. Because, like, I was just, like, a tweaky, like, energetic kid. And, like, all his stuff is just, like, pure energy. I was I gotta know what that is. I gotta figure that out, you know? That was, like, the first time I felt like that.
It's insane to think how many brilliant world-class drummers came out of, like, shitty little post-war towns in England from a period of, like, 3 to 5 years,
mm-hmm.
like Ginger Baker, John Bonham, like, and even, like, the chill guys, like, Charlie from the Stones and like Ringo, they were still of the best of all time. It's crazy. What a concentration of epic drummers.
And also to think how like relaxed it was, like a lot of like the like stories from back then, like the story of how Keith Moon joined The Who was he saw them at a bar and he was like, hey, I could do that better than the guy on stage. And they're like, oh yeah? Okay, well, why don't you come play a song? Yeah. And then, like, Keith Moon just, like, got up there and, like, kind of knew how to play the drums. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, we think, yeah, okay. Why don't you just do it? Like, and then they just, like, kicked out their other drummer.
Yeah.
And that's, like, how he, like, got the job. So he's like, I could do it better than him. And they were like, okay.
And they were all probably wearing suits for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, what about you, man?
So the first music that I kind of obsessed over was when I was pretty young and I got my first, like, CD player, with like the big ridiculous foamy headphones, and then I had two CDs with it, and it was Gorillaz' Demon Days,
awesome,
and the Harry Potter soundtrack, and okay. I listened to both of those just alternating like nonstop.
Yeah,
oh, man,
it's because it was all you had.
Yeah,
remember
track
those
by track or album?
yeah,
it depends on the day. But
yeah, that's
I remember like. Really, really getting into that Gorillaz album, which is I still like.
Oh, it's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. Really good. So much variety too.
Yeah,
sort of styles
for sure. And I just loved like it was just so chill the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like the drum tracks were so chill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was probably the first album I like obsessed over.
Yeah, and those like lazy vocals too. I really like that style.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We also want to. We'll go back around, starting with you this time. Tell us the first thing you bought with your own money, like
first
ever
album,
mowed a lawn or got a fast food job. What when you went and it was like, this is my money, I'm buying this, or even if it was your allowance, what did you fork over the cash for? First thing, let's start with you.
I gotta remember that honestly. Like it was probably like Pokemon cards or something.
First CD.
Okay. Let's pull it back in. I think I gotta go way back.
First drugs, actually.
Man, it was a wild time. I was 10.
I saw colors I didn't know existed.
The first record I remember buying was a Blink-182 record.
Okay.
Take Off Your Pants and Jacket.
Yeah,
that was the first. Yeah. I think that was the first CD I bought.
I don't know that album, but I love that title.
Yeah,
it was. I don't know if you guys remember NoFX. Big Warped Tour band, but they had an album called The Heavy Petting Zoo. Every time I heard that title, I would crack up. It's like, who has the balls to name an album that? The Heavy Petting Zoo. And it was just like a picture of some guy like spooning a sheep on the front or something ridiculous like that.
It's yeah,
that's funny.
All right, so Blink-182, what do you got?
Oh, man, first thing I remember buying... It's kind of blurry for me in terms of, like, records early on that I bought, but one that I distinctly remember, this was from high school, was by this band The Aquabats. Also, Travis Barker, before he was in Blink-182, he was in a ska band called The Aquabats.
Right, yeah.
And best, he played on maybe two records, but like he played on one called The Fury of The Aquabats.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love that record so much, and like I got really into ska and ska punk, especially like through Travis Barker and that band and everything, and like I love that record.
How far did you go with the ska? Did you get into stuff?
I was in a suit. I didn't have a suit, but before this band, I was in a ska band.
That is awesome.
In upstate New York. And I not everyone necessarily in the band, but a couple of us were like into everything from like ska punk all the way back to reggae into like dancehall ska. And
those
stuff
genres
like that
are so marginalized in the States.
Yeah,
it's
for
crazy.
Sure.
There's like how few people play them or buy the records.
Yeah.
Whereas in Europe, you know, for a time there, that was like it. All the young people listened to reggae and ska.
Yeah.
I love that shit, man. I wish more people gave a shit about that kind of music in America.
Yeah, I listened to that show on Co-op just about every weekend, Jamaican Gold.
Yeah. Yes, that's such a great show.
So good.
That is such a great Wake and Bake.
Well, that's one option. Yeah.
What about you? Oh, no, wait, we already did you. What do you got for us?
Oh, man. So this is a little embarrassing given its resurgence on the internet. But Smash Mouth Astro Lounge.
Was that the one with all the hits?
Yeah, that was all the hits.
That was
all the tracks, man. That was the
shit.
They
were sort of a ska band that... kind of went commercial, right? When they got signed, they toned it down a little bit.
I don't actually know. I don't
Some
know
of their like guitar work and stuff like that was like kind of inspired by like
because like Madness keyboards going a little bit too.
Yeah. Because like definitely like whatever that record before it in like 96, 97 or whatever, right when like Real Big Fish and No Doubt and everyone was around, like definitely
and
their
Sublime.
Record.
Sublime to me, the one really great American ska band was Sublime.
Their record from the Smash Mouth record from the 90s definitely had some of that stuff.
It did, and I think they even toured with some of those like Sublime and some of the other California bands at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. All right, very cool. I know a lot more about you guys. Hey,
please,
she
judge
just
me.
Stuck her paw in my water. This cat just started fishing in my water.
Well, yeah, this
there's no fish in there, cat.
Yeah, that's what she does. If you leave, yeah, she likes to drink your water.
I love just like this cat doesn't give a fuck.
Don't leave the top off of that kratom, or she'll be flying around the room. She'll be like drinking that kratom and getting wild. So where did you guys get your band together? Where did you meet and get started?
We got our band together at Ithaca College. We all went to just music school upstate New York, in Ithaca. And, we all were like percussion majors in music school. And so we were all in the same studio. Cool. So we met each other when we were freshmen and, you're just like playing all the stuff together that you would do in school. Mm-hmm. And then like our senior year, we like got together to do this.
Okay.
Yeah. And outside of class and stuff.
Yeah. Outside of class.
So where is everybody from originally? Tell us where you were born and all that.
I'm from the Finger Lakes near Rochester, New York. Mm-hmm. Grew up in a really, really small town.
Cool.
Yeah. It's pretty near Ithaca.
I moved around a lot as a kid, but I would like identify as being from New Jersey. Because that's like where my family's from. That's where I went to high school.
Yeah, I have family from Jersey. Yeah. Awesome. What about you?
I also grew up in New Jersey. Okay. And by total coincidence, like 5 minutes down the road from Sean.
Yeah.
That you never met?
We met one time when we were in high school.
We were in high school honor
tell
band.
Tell the story.
We were in high school honor band together.
Yes.
Oh, please don't tell the story.
Tell the story.
Okay. All right.
It's fine. Chuck E. Cheese.
So we were in like one of those... you know, it's like you're in the school band and then like a bunch of towns get together and like all the juniors and seniors like get together and play in a big band for the county or whatever they call it. County band, region band.
Region band,
So we were in one of those together and like I was playing in the percussion section. It was me and like a bunch of my high school buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this kid, who was Sean, turns out,
this guy.
Sitting over on the timpani playing timpani in this band. And he had this like big old 5x5 Rubik's Cube. And he was, like, so excited about it, and he kept showing us, and, like, the whole time, like, all weekend, he was doing it in the rehearsals, and he was doing it, and then there was this moment.
I didn't have a lot of notes, so I was resting a lot. So, like, in rehearsal, it would be like, oh, there's no timpani on this, but, like, I was in high school, so I wasn't, like, allowed to, like, leave. So I just, like,
You had the Rubik's.
So he was so excited about this Rubik's Cube, and then we're rehearsing this, like, really quiet, intimate thing, and the conductor's very, very focused, and then you just hear this, whoosh, and the drums are smattering, and the Rubik's Cube had exploded. It, like, smacked on the drums and went everywhere, and the room fell
like,
silent.
Exploded over the
I was,
timpani.
Like, speed, I was, like, trying to speed do it, and, like, all the pieces weren't, like...
I've never seen someone break.
They weren't aligned, and I went like this, and it just went...
Fell down on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, like, the 5x5s are, like, have, like, 60 pieces, 60 moving pieces inside of them. And they're all, like, really tiny, so they break all the
time. That is awesome,
That was a very heartbreaking and traumatic little, like, high school moment where I was, like... Oh, cool! I'm like in an honor band with like real musicians or whatever, like all these like really intense like band kids.
I'm a
and
big
then,
boy.
And then like, and it was the worst because
And then you're like, I blew up my Rubik's Cube.
Yeah,
and ruined rehearsal.
So asthma attacks.
Well, I mean, I bet the kids loved it. Probably, it's probably
everyone was
the
like
director.
Everyone, it was very awkward.
Sean was kind of the legend for a little while.
our kid that plays percussion with a Rubik's Cube that's been shattered.
So then I get to college, and the very first day, I'm walking down the hallway, and I see him. He's like, oh, dude, hey. I was like, no freaking way. And I'm like calling all my friends, like, you're not going to believe it. Goes in. It's like fucking Rubik's Cube kid. Oh, my God.
So how in the world did you guys find your way to Texas?
So good.
From...
Oh, well, I went to... I did my master's at UT.
Okay.
And kind of everyone was doing their masters in a different place. And, like, we were... I mean, we knew we wanted to do this project afterwards and be in a city. So we all just kind of talked about the cities we were in for grad schools and, like, which one would feel like the best for everyone.
Where did you guys...
Wait, yeah, which cities didn't make the cut?
Yeah.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
I can see that.
I was living in Rochester, New York.
Okay. And then Andrew was in Bloomington, Indiana.
Okay, yeah. Right. So
well, Austin beats all those.
Yeah.
We're also looking at New York City, but who can afford it? So.
Yeah.
You guys would be sharing a room like this size...
Yeah.
Bunk
or like
wall.
Living in Connecticut or something.
Yeah.
Taking the train in. you gotta play a gig or whatever.
So
you can get all your percussion instruments on the train.
When did you guys first play in bands? Or I don't know if you played in bands. When you were growing up, high school, college, did any of you just be a straight drummer for an alt rock band or anything like that?
For sure. I played in punk bands, alternative rock bands, ska bands, probably from... Well, I got my first drum set when I was in sixth grade, but I started playing when I moved to New Jersey in bands in, like, seventh grade, probably. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I played in... Probably since, like, I was in eighth grade through, like, senior year, I played in random, rock bands.
Did you all have, like, full kits at home when you were like, junior high and high school?
Yeah, I had a kind of a shitty Yamaha Stage Custom that was pretty old. I would just go around. This was, like, kind of my first exposure to, like, prog rock and cool things like that. So that was kind of where I draw a lot of my influence now. I don't know, but, it's just... This is not good. We had a two-piece that actually... on one of our last tours, we kind of got together and played again for the first time in, like, 6 years.
Yeah.
Because, we were just, hanging in Syracuse writing some music for a couple weeks. And he lived not that far away, so, we got together, two times and just threw together some old songs. It was a lot of fun. Dude was an incredible guitarist.
It was just guitar and drums?
Yeah, kind of like a Hella-type thing.
Cool.
Any vocals or...?
No.
Very cool, yeah.
Straight up guitar and drums,
What about you? Oh, we already heard about your ska.
Yeah.
What about you? Were you in a hardcore Christian punk band or something?
Oh, man. I kind of wish I was. No, I definitely played in, the emo band when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
It was very short-lived and not very good at all. But it was mostly an excuse for, the dude playing guitar to, do those kicks that were in all the music video. Jump up and kick in the air and land on the ground and... and then when I was in high school, I just kind of messed around. I played in a lot of jazz combos. And then eventually I started playing in this hip hop band.
Nice. When did you get into jazz, or where did you get your jazz chops from? Was there jazz band at school, in high school?
There was. I wasn't really involved with it. I really don't remember what the progression was. But I started listening to a lot of jazz drummers. I remember really liking Jeff Watts when I was a kid. He was really great. And also Winard Harper was this really crazy a drummer who pulled, a fusion drummer. I remember he had a percussionist in his band, too. And I was, listening to these records, and then I would just, kind of play standards with some friends in my basement. Yeah, nothing even close. I was just, kind of keeping time.
T for two.
Yeah, this is great. So I was probably, the least active on drum set, because by the time I got to high school, I was very obsessive on marimba. It's oh my god, look at all these notes I can hit.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's the pipe organ.
When you
get
the two mallets in each hand, whatever you call that, on the marimba.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Yeah, I was I got to figure out how to make this work.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you all are, and then your fourth member also had the similar journey where...
Yeah, I think Andrew definitely had a similar journey to all of us, where he definitely started out as a drum set player and, had a high school band and he learned mallet percussion and stuff also in high school and then, did a similar thing to us in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in college... did you all have a specific percussion ensemble then? Were you all were that, or was there anything bigger than just your quartet that you did?
For sure. School related, there definitely was.
Yeah.
There was the things at any time in our major between all the years and grad students, there were 20, 4 to 30 students.
Cool.
So there would be like an underclassman percussion ensemble made up of like 15, 16 kids. Mm-hmm. So like we would just, you know, our professors would like be like, you six people, you're playing this piece.
Yeah.
You, like all 13 of us are doing this crazy big like percussion orchestra madness mm-hmm. thing where it's
yeah.
like every instrument that like takes up the whole room and everything, you know?
Yeah, I always loved those concerts in music school. It was mm-hmm. my favorite. It's like, oh, thank God, it's not another French horn recital or something. You know, like, it's so much more interesting to listen to sometimes than the straight stuff. Because the other interesting, well, you guys understand this, maybe our listeners don't, but, like, most percussion repertoire is modern, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there's not, I don't think there's any classical or romantic pieces, really, for...
No. No,
for
the first, I mean, the first percussion ensemble...
Yeah.
The first movement of a work for a percussion ensemble was in the 20s, and then
right.
the first thing that was considered a standalone piece was in, it was in the 30s.
Yeah,
you know?
so all of your music is modern, you know?
Yeah, or
you
since the birth of recording, which...
That's
you know,
true, too.
That's true, yeah.
In music history.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting thing, you know, to think about that, you know,
you're not bound by the
you're not bound by the classics and all of your influences are modern, you know.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah.
And I think like two big hangovers from doing all that was one being like the sound palette,
mm-hmm.
Where even though like now we've kind of fallen into a fixed setup,
mm-hmm.
When we were playing in those percussion ensembles, really, like, one of the great joys was figuring out what the sound palette was going to be.
Yeah.
Or, like, sometimes, sure, you would play pitch things and it'd be, like, a vibraphone quartet. And that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, that could be very beautiful. But we would play pieces where it'd be like, okay, we have 300 wood blocks and this conch shell,
mm-hmm.
and we're, like, rolling chains and buckets, and, you know, that's what we're working with.
Yeah.
Or totally the opposite, where we're playing, like, mixing bowls with chopsticks, and someone's playing, like, really quiet xylophone over the
right.
top. Where, even though we've kind of, as a quartet, gravitated towards keeping our setup as in control as possible logistically, that I think is kind of what sparked our exploration of, like, how we could bring electronics into our setup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we in our early days, there was, like, an ear for how we could get the most unique and interesting sounds to work together. So now that we're dealing a lot more with analog synthesis and all of our marimba and vibes have contact mics, and we process the sounds with pedal boards.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like trying to
go through the pedal boards. That's like,
sure.
That's like, I think most of our listeners care mostly about what pedals
yeah.
you use.
For sure.
So what do you guys, let's run us through your setup. What do you...
So my main instrument is the vibraphone. I also keep just like a ride cymbal and a floor tom
mm-hmm.
in my rig. We all have floor toms. That's kind of like the gel that keeps us
right.
all together.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of obsessed with the sound of unison drums.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's there's something so amazing about
it. We're just so wired for that. Right?
Yeah.
There's something about it.
Endlessly fascinating. But yeah, so my vibraphone and Andrew's marimba is the same. Each bar has a piezo mic on it,
mm-hmm.
right on the nodal point, so it doesn't really interfere with the resonance. Those are all wired together to just a
mm-hmm.
quarter inch output. And then on my rig, I run it through a pedal board. So do you,
give us
like
the signal chain.
Okay,
let me
envision it. The first thing I use is like this freeze pedal, the Electro Harmonix Freeze,
because
like, that's just the coolest tool
pedal,
ever.
Yeah.
So I'll use it a lot for drones. Like I'll hit a chord or hit a note.
Let's describe that for anybody who hasn't watched a video of the EHX Freeze. It's basically, it's one of the features from the Hog pedal, the massive pedal they made, where you just like you hit a note and you can latch it or momentary and it holds that note, so you can just drone or you can go through chord changes, but it just gives you this sustaining note.
Yeah.
And so you're doing that like giving it a percussion hit.
Yeah.
And letting that ride.
Yeah, there's sections where like I'll hit a couple notes and get like the vibraphone ringing and we'll have like 8-9 pitches ringing,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll just freeze that sound.
Oh, cool.
So in theory, that sound could ring forever.
Yeah.
Right.
So sometimes I'll do that and like mess with the processing on that sound. That's why I put it first in my chain.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, it's really interesting because a vibraphone has a pedal like a piano where
mm-hmm.
you can dampen and take off, but you can, on the latch mode, that's essentially what the freeze pedal does. It's like you hold it and it sustains
yeah.
and it takes off. So you can do really interesting things where, like, you're sustaining some notes on the vibraphone and some notes on that pedal,
mm-hmm.
and they overlap in different ways.
Yeah.
That's been the newer project messing with that.
So you're running that first in the chain so that you can burn it through whatever effects.
Exactly.
Right, and then you can tweak knobs or something.
Okay. For sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys use any gain stages in your setup?
No.
No. Okay.
No overdrives.
Well, I use this one.
Or compression or anything?
I'm not using any compression right now. I was for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly changing out the pedal board.
Yeah.
Our studio is right by that Rock and Roll Rentals.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Shout out to them.
We're all pedal of the month.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're amazing. Yeah, so
you
like,
can play with different ones each.
Yeah.
Switch them out.
It's amazing how many guitar pedals like freak out when you have a vibraphone going, because you could have so many pitches ringing at the same time.
I imagine, like octave pedals that are trying to grab onto one note would just sound like ripping Velcro.
Okay. Yeah, so it's been really good. I change out. I've slowed down a little bit, but for a while, like every week I was going and getting three new pedals and trying, just seeing what like actually
that
worked.
Makes me feel so much better about my addiction.
Yeah, it saved a lot of dough doing that.
Yeah.
The next thing in the chain is there's this company Moore Electronics that does these like really tiny pedals.
Like, oh, Moore, yeah.
I've got a
really
compressor.
Good clones. Yeah, he has their diamond clone compressor. Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, so the thing that I have next in the chain is the pitch box, which is a pitch shifter, which I almost never use as a pitch shifter. It has this one mode that's, they call it detune. Mm-hmm. But what essentially it is a harmonizer that, rather than harmonizing by like a half steps, it harmonizes by cents.
Okay,
so like I could hit the vibraphone and it lets the clean signal through and then harmonizes it like 2 cents flat as well.
Okay, wow. So it's kind of crunchy.
Yeah, what it does is like if you ever hear like an orchestra play and like if two violinists are playing a little out of tune, it has this like natural, really
chorus
awkward
effect,
vibrato.
It's a like a chorus pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it just works really
very
well on the vibes.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate of like experimenting with being a little out of tune when recording, just because so many brilliant recordings are out of tune. And like then the age of snarks and like badass tuner pedals, like everything's a little bit too in tune. You know, I like the way the Beatles would sometimes slow the tape down, where it was like some impossible pitch that you couldn't even get. And of course, the great blues stuff too. All that early blues stuff has this like, who knows what that thing was tuned to?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, little insider secret.
Yeah.
On one of the tracks on our record that's coming out, we actually like the verses of this one tune, the last track on the record, we took off the vibraphone keys and put in an entirely new set of keys that was tuned 2 cents flat.
Oh, wow.
So that whole section, it comes back twice in that tune. The vibes sound like really weird. It has a really mellow effect.
Mm-hmm.
They sound a little strange, and that's what's going on. It wasn't any processing.
That
it was just
awesome.
Like out of tune bars.
Straight up,
And they're like, so like you hear like the chords of like the road sound that Andrew's playing are like a lot of like the notes are in there. So you just hear like out of tune vibe bars against the roads, and they like grind a little bit.
Yeah,
in like a really cool way.
That's for neat.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah, let's run through some more pedals.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I play like more of the traditional drum set stuff in the group, but like, so my drum set rig is I have like kick, snare, 2 floor toms, but like I play with two snare drums, like a big one and a little one, and then like 2 sets of hi-hats, like a really big set of hi-hats, like 18-inch crash cymbals, and then like really small, like 13-inch hi-hats. Basically, because I just am interested in, well, I mean, in like a lot of like pop music and commercial music, there's like many different drum set sounds. It'll be like, oh, like, yeah, it'll be like, oh, in the verse, there's like a really tight, close down like drum set sound, and then it opens up and it's like a really huge sound for like the chorus, you know, or whatever I mean, you know. So like I was like, okay, well, what would be like the acoustic drum set version of that?
Like
really tight sound for like the smaller sections, and then the big section you want to open up, like playing bigger drums and bigger cymbals and stuff like that. So
nice.
I do that live a lot right now. And then I also have like a table on the side of me that has like an octave of tuned desk bells, and then just like I'll put like, you know, I'll have like sleigh bells and some other jingles and like noise type things on there. And then I just for Christmas I got myself a Critter and Guitari organelle.
No way. Wait, is that the one that makes the lights or
No, that's the one that just came out. It's the one that's like it's the one that basically just runs Pure Data patches. So I'm going to get into that, and basically right now, you know, I use it a lot because it's just uploaded in it. There's like a patch for just really simple, like triangle, sawtooth, sine wave, stuff like that. So like right now I'm using it to play some like bass synth stuff. But like, I mean, I'm going to get into just like putting whatever I want to and programming whatever I want to on that, you know, because like for me, for a long time I used a computer and like was just running computer stuff, aiming from like GarageBand to like Reason and things like that. But now that we're touring, it's like I just need something that's like super small. And then like lo and behold, Critter and Guitari came out with this like amazing thing that's like this big that does all the things a computer could do.
Yeah, so, that company is really coming up with some shit. Like,
yeah,
very inventive, very original stuff.
Their new like video thing that just came out a couple days ago. I don't remember the name of it, but super interesting. Well,
they've got these things where you can run sound into it and it does like a visual display.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I watched one where that this chick played a drum kit through it, and she's just in like a dark space to where the machine is making all the lights and it matches up to the drum hits.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, that's entertaining. That's like just a drummer could book a gig. If you had the light show to go with it, like a really good drummer, I would watch that for an hour, no problem. I would pay for that.
Yeah. And they just a couple days ago came out with like an even crazier version of that one. That's like bigger, and it has like that one had like five or six different like settings or channels or whatever they call it. But they just came out with one that's like it's got like a gajillion different settings and like it's super super interesting.
I'm excited to see where they go.
Definitely
way to go, guys.
What about you? Are you into pedals at all?
A little bit, not so much as Chris or anything, but I have kind of my main melodic instrument in the band is I have a Korg Mini Loge, which is a four voice poly synth that they came out with, I think, a little over a year ago. And I run some effects through that. So I have a DL4 hooked up to that. Do a lot of delay, some looping stuff.
Have you modded the DL4 at all?
I have not yet.
Okay.
I've talked to many people and they've all said get it modded.
It's fun.
Yeah. I haven't gotten around to that yet.
So what are some of the things you're using on the... Are you using the reverse or the what do you favor on that?
Well, so the album that we're releasing, we recorded all before I got that, so nothing probably anyone will hear for a while actually features a DL4.
It's
a lot of good live solutions though.
Yeah,
in that box.
It really is. So definitely the looping feature is something I'm interested in using. Especially because the Korg has a great sequencer. Just maybe even pairing those up and just getting like three layers just from my setup.
Or just instant, like if you need a little bit of time between tracks, those things are great for just kicking in this wash, this soundscape.
I finally got like a one really good wash sound dialed.
I like when I see a band, I just want to be pummeled with their sound. The whole time. I don't want any fucking awkward silence. Just like, just kick on a looper and just keep hammering my ears for the whole set. You know, just unrelenting sound. That's what I like. So what's the plans now? Are you guys about to embark on a tour? Or what's happening in your lives musically?
Well, the album's dropping.
Right? Album's dropping a week from Friday.
Okay.
So we actually just got back from a tour a week and a half ago, two weeks ago. It was actually a tour that we booked like before we even had like a timeline and everything, like, except for the record, but we just played, we just like went up to the East Coast and back. So we played like Nashville, Cincinnati, Indiana, and upstate New York and New York City. Just like on a little like week and a half jaunt up there and back. And so that just happened. We got the record coming out a week from Friday, and then the Thursday after, May 4th, will be our album release show here, and then we're gonna play some weekend run out stuff to different mm-hmm. cities around Texas. And
where's the release
stuff.
Show? What
it's going to be at Chirp Charlie's.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you tour with all the percussion equipment? I gotta ask, because that's like
it's a trailer.
Yeah, it's a big trailer.
Yeah, it's like a 6x8. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Chris's SUV is making a valiant effort to tow it.
Well, at least you only have four dudes.
That's true.
Yeah. So
I will say, like, his instrument, Chris's instrument, his vibraphone, and Andrew's marimba fold up to be very compact.
That's right.
So and because of the pickup systems, there's no resonators, which, like, the giant pipes underneath.
Yeah, okay.
We don't tour with those. So it just kind of looks like a table with a bunch of keys. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That
so,
makes sense.
Which can then fold up, and then we can, like, it makes right. everything stackable and packable in a very compact way.
So you just go with, like, two drum kits. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, it's not that much as far as like Spacehawks. Are you running through the back line, or are you guys bringing amps for your?
On this last tour, we brought a PA and a bass amp because some of the spaces needed it.
Mm-hmm.
The PA is very rare that we'll use. We'll normally just plug into whatever system they have. But we do often use. Do you want to talk more about your bass amp at all?
It's a PV Max 450 or that
just a
we just run bass sounds through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we all have, like, there are three different synths that play bass sounds. So, like, Taylor, myself, and Andrew all will play bass sounds at different parts of the set. So mm-hmm. we just, like, mix all those down in a little like, mixer and run them through the bass amp.
Right.
What size speaker is it on the PA?
2x10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
punchy.
Yeah.
Do you do your own, like, well, since you don't have to mic the vibraphone and the marimba, do you do your own, like, drum miking, or do you clubs to do that?
Clubs do that when we play really big spaces.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on where we're at and what we're doing and everything.
Yeah.
We did everything from, like, a small, like, secret house show to, like, a big, like, club. When we were in Ithaca, New York, we played, like, a really big club. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's, like, you know, a mic on every drum.
Yeah.
And everything on stage
when
we do that.
To do it for you.
Yeah for
well,
sure.
Well, some spaces you wouldn't even need to mic them, I would think.
Right.
Yeah, we've definitely do that sometimes where we don't mic anything. So.
Yeah.
There will be times, we will probably get back to it soon, though, is just, like, we used to be in the habit of, like, always miking. I have desk bells, and he has a glockenspiel, and mm-hmm. Taylor does. And we used to be in the habit of, like, no matter what we were doing, like, those two things get just, like, a 57.
Mm-hmm.
And after this tour, I think we'll probably get back to just throwing a 57 over those things all the time.
Yeah.
Just because sometimes we'll be playing a section where it's, like, loud-ass drum kit and, like, vibraphone with, like, a distortion pedal, and then there's, like, a glockenspiel, and it's, like, how is that ever going to compete in terms of volume, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that's definitely probably, like, the one thing that, like, deserves to be amplified
mm-hmm.
in most situations.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys will have a lot of different miking solutions as you evolve.
Yeah, for sure, and we're getting better about, like, our setups getting on and off stage. People are always impressed with, like, you know, like, we played three shows at South By, you know, with, like, 15-minute changeovers. Mm-hmm. And, like, and people, like, look at us and they're like, whoa. All right.
These dudes ain't gonna make it.
Yeah, but I mean, we know that we look intimidating, so I think we overcompensate, and we're actually really quick on stage, and we're really quick off stage.
Yeah.
But we're always getting better at stuff like that, you know, and finding solutions and, like, I mean, for me, like, I've got, like, this table that's essentially like a hard case. Like, I used to have like a folding table, and then I'd like set up every single desk bell, and then I'd set up the synth, and I'd do this, and I'd put the, and now it's literally like a table that I've like fastened like carpeting to that like has
everything velcroed down,
everything, and like the so like I literally just like go on stage, I open up this table, and like a whole bunch of things are just already set up, you know,
I mean,
we're like all the little trinkets and the toys, like we're evolving to like create better ways to like keep all that stuff. So.
Well, I mean, it's important because it's freaking maddening as a musician to
especially
have to
South by Southwest or like CJ, where it's just like you got 10 minutes.
And then you also you like start forgetting stuff. You start leaving stuff behind. Yeah. Maybe you have a few drinks at a show.
I was gonna say South By was a good example of when we played a different sound system every night. So our first show was at the Sidewinder, and that was like that thing East by Sweet Beast, and that was like an avant thing. But that was like. There was like a backline bass amp and backline drum set, and then we DI'd everything else. And then like 2 days later, we played All the Friends Ball at Spider House, and they had backline guitar amps. So like marimba and vibes got plugged into guitar amps, you know. Right. And we kind of just in those situations like just go with whatever people want us to
whatever to do,
you know. And I mean that probably changed the sound a little bit, you know, running vibes and marimba through guitar amps. Mm-hmm. But like I mean, I think. That was definitely an interesting, just like kind of us rolling with the punches. I guess is something we've always been doing good at, you know. So
Well, you can't get too obsessed in those situations.
Yeah, for sure.
Being exactly the same because it just isn't going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't one of you have to leave earlier than the others? I hate to put somebody off on the schedule. Yeah,
15 more minutes.
Yeah, 15. Okay.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Well, let's talk about... That's perfect, because what I wanted to talk about was how you all recorded the album, who you worked with. Mm-hmm. So, who wants to talk about that?
I'll take that one. We recorded the album in October and November in just, like, a bunch of... houses of ours and our friends around town. Myself and another friend of ours, Charlie Magnone, served as like the tracking engineers. He's a pianist in town.
Oh, I know Charlie.
He works with like cool Fast Forward Austin and stuff like that. So basically I knew what type of drum sounds I wanted to get and kind of consulted with a bunch of other friends on like miking, marimba and vibe and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we went to Rock and Roll Reynolds and rented absolutely everything.
Right.
And did it ourselves. Wow. And so we just I kind of made like a dream list of what I wanted, what mics I wanted to use for drums and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And for marimba vibes. And then we picked up like a couple other like boutique-y like a tube stereo mic and like another weird thing and whatever. And so we did that and we self-recorded everything.
Nice.
Because
it sounds really clean. Sounds
really thanks. Good. Yeah, I. We all kind of take pride in drum tuning.
Have you studied?
Should say that is that I started out in college as a recording engineering major. Okay. And in high school when I was like playing in bands and stuff, like one of the first things I bought with my own money was like an old like really early like digital like multi-track thing that was like a hardware multi-tracker jam whatever it was.
Did it have like a CD-ROM?
It had like I think it probably like burned its own CDs at the end of the process.
No, that was like
something like that
was pretty much the tits in like the late 90s
totally
early 2000s.
I had like, something like that mid 2000s and then got like this sweet like digital audio workstation thing, like my dad got for me for my birthday.
I started out on a Tascam cassette 4-track.
Yeah, nice.
That's, you know,
that's awesome.
It's, you could do cool
that
things
was,
with
that
it.
Was,
you can slow
yeah,
you,
yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
Do the slow.
But that's cool. Okay,
thing.
So
I did that, and then I went to when I went to Ithaca College specifically to be in the recording program.
Okay.
For my own journey, I decided to switch to being a performance major. But like,
shout
out to that place. Like, has like the most incredible recording and recording technology program, and like the professors are geniuses and they're really fantastic. So, and also our mix engineer and our mastering engineer, like both went through that program.
Okay.
And so they were like friends of ours from Ithaca. So, so I served as a tracking engineer with Charlie, and Charlie also kind of helped in terms of like producing and like really for us, like he helped dialing in our synth sounds and our keyboard sounds and stuff like that.
Groovy.
And then he and I kind of collaborated in terms of like drum mic placement and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of did like drum tuning and like all that stuff on it.
Right.
And then I did the kind of like, I kind of engineering for mixing, like kind of like editing things, getting the best takes, mm-hmm. you know, and all that stuff. And then our good friend Mike Caparizzo, who's actually a professor now at Ithaca, but we were all in school with him at the time. He mixed the record up in Ithaca at this okay. great, awesome studio called Pyramid Sound, which is an amazing analog, his huge analog board, this yeah. like thing called this Neve Flying Faders board, which like the dude up there, Alex Perialis, who's like this big engineer up there, like he got it in the 90s for like, it's like super amazing, all analog stuff that Mike got to mix on.
Nice.
And then our friend Gabe Millman, another Ithacan who now lives in Nashville.
Okay.
He mastered it at Georgetown Masters.
Okay.
Which, like, they're kind of more known for, like, the doing, like, country stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, he's right up the... He knows exactly the sounds we're looking for, and we had, like, all similar tastes in music and stuff.
That's great.
So,
yeah, so it sounds like you got
He's a fantastic drummer himself.
He's an amazing
across
drummer.
The board.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really lucky that we got to work with a lot of friends on the thing, you know, mm-hmm. and friends who've all gone on to do, like, really cool things, especially in terms of recording. We're like super lucky to know people who really know so much more than we do and have a really incredible sets of ears and stuff.
How did you do the mixing? If he was in, did you all, one of you fly up there?
I flew up. Yeah. Well, so I was home. So I was like planning on just like taking a personal week in Ithaca just to like, cause I just like love it up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was gonna be right after the holidays cause I was like home for Christmas in New Jersey. And Mike was like, oh, like, I'm actually just going to mix it, like, January 2nd to 8th. And I was like, I'm going to be in Ithaca January 2nd to 8th. Like, so I would, like, go in every morning, mm-hmm. and he'd be like, all right, talk me through this song. Like, musically, what are you thinking for this song? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the melody? What's the harmony? What's this? What's that? Have you thought about panning or anything? Are there any things like that that, like, mm-hmm. compositionally feel like they're a part of the song already? And we, like, would talk through a song. He'd be like, all right. I'm going to work for like 4 hours. I'll see you later. And then like I'd come back. And then after that, like just lots of Dropbox, lots of like him sending a Dropbox mix out to these guys and them sending me comments. And then like he and I would talk through like all the band's comments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So awesome. And this technology these days.
I know.
Skype in there and use the mix.
Super awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd want to hear the mix through Skype though.
But you could
Skype audio.
You could animate your points while you're talking to them.
Yeah, that's right.
For sure.
You can see your gesticulations.
Yeah.
It's a mix of no good.
Yeah, it was definitely. I mean. Mike is a fantastic engineer, but, like, just in terms of, like, budget and timing and, like, having a week to mix it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it was really awesome to be there in the flesh because, like, you know, I mean, like, just like what you're saying, like, me being in the room helped a lot, you know? Because instead of, like, sending an email about what we were looking for musically, it was
kind of, I mean, anything
like,
with music, like, the more time you have to put into it, the closer you get to, like, the real idea,
right?
You know?
For sure. But also just in terms of, like, we're just lucky that I was kind of able to, like, just spend some time, like, in the flesh to, like, exactly just kind of, you know.
Give him notes, yeah.
Give him notes and stuff in person and stuff like that.
Something to work with at the beginning.
Yeah.
Did it turn out the way you guys wanted it to? Like, sound-wise, do you think you captured what you were looking for?
I think so, you know. I think it's all a process, mm-hmm. you know, and it took us a while to capture things. And I think we're all interested in continuing down this path of, like, all right, we're going to track it and have friends mix and master mm-hmm. it. So I think there were a lot of things we're super happy with. And then there are a lot of things where it's like, cool, that sounds great, but maybe next time we could, like, do this.
Exactly. I don't know if people realize how picky musicians are. No, you'll never hear a musician say, this album is not exactly the way I want it. Nothing ever change. There's always something that sticks in your craw about.
Could you make that tom a little warmer?
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's things for us that, like, you know, being so involved in the, like, us, like, tracking the thing and, like, editing the thing, like, I think we will all, there will all be a part of our brain that's always, like, listening to it from the creation,
mm-hmm.
the creation part of the brain, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. we're all still thinking about, like, oh, would that have been better than that take, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, like, whatever, mm-hmm. just, yeah.
So. Right on.
Well, what do you guys listen to when you're on the road? Do you have favorite bands for the SUV?
Yeah, I mean, we listen to a variety of things. I think as a band, like, we listen to like a lot of math rock stuff and post rock and just what's kind of hip in that scene these days. I know a band that I'm really into right now is the band Palm from Philadelphia. Saw them at South By. They were incredible. I know we're all pretty big fans of Tortoise.
Okay, yeah.
That's kind of where we draw a lot of influence from.
Yeah, I can see that.
you know, it just, it depends on the mood. Sometimes we listen to music, sometimes we listen to podcasts.
I've been obsessed. That's why we started this. Like, I feel like I listen to as much podcasts as I do music these days. I'm completely obsessed with the genre.
In my car, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
You're just so candid, and I find myself watching less and less movies and TV. Like, I need the real... realness of podcasts.
There's so much to learn about this world.
You know, I like all of them. The Hardcore History, I don't know if you guys ever listened to that one. It's an amazing history podcast. There's a true crime one I listen to. Like, I'm not specific. I just like a well-made podcast.
Yeah. One that we definitely listen to a lot in on tour was Song Exploder. You guys listen to that one at all? Song Exploder is fantastic. It's usually like 20 to 25 minutes, and it's essentially... an artist will come in and break down a song and like, so this is how I came up with the melody, and you'll hear the melody. This is how I came up with this part. This is how I came up with this part. And then, like, you listen to the song at the end.
That's cool.
And so it's just, like, they break it down, and, like, you hear just individual, like, isolated tracks.
Yeah.
And they talk about recording and composing those isolated tracks, and then you hear the whole song together. It's really awesome.
That's great.
It's a good one.
I'm going to check that one out. Yeah. What else? What are some of the other podcasts that you guys listen to when you're... Sorry, I'm trying to think of WTF or anything.
We did listen to a little bit.
I listen to some WTF a lot.
Whenever there are musicians on, like, I always make a point to listen
to them. Yeah, for sure.
What else did we listen to on this last trip?
We were How Did This Get Made? The comedy podcast.
We listened to some comedy podcasts for sure.
Yeah.
Just, like, rip on really awful movies. That's fun.
Yeah. We all have an affinity for, like, B movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So so definitely, like, them talking about, like, oh, like Sharknado 5. Or whatever, like, yeah.
Dissecting the plot of Sharknado.
Right on.
Yeah.
We checked out How Stuff Works. They have a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is really awesome. It's just, like, every episode is like, here's this totally random topic, and we're going to go into extreme detail.
Yeah.
It was one about, like, the Easter Island Moao statues, and then another one is about, like, cool, so, like, strip malls, how does that work?
Yeah.
And then, like hats, like, why do people wear hats, you know?
I definitely remember we listened to one about how jackhammers work.
Yeah.
We actually were like, how, what could they possibly talk about for this long? I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, cool. All right, turn on.
I would think the history of them would be interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, the early proto jackhammers probably blew up or something crazy. Like,
well, they had to pick them up for every stroke. It was lift and then pressurized down. Yeah.
The
things
and
we know.
Just guys with huge power.
No wonder
they were talking,
like,
before. They were talking
stereotype,
like,
stereotype of the guy with the giant biceps working.
They were talking about the predecessor was literally just a person with a sledgehammer, and, like, that was literally a job that, like, lowered your life expectancy by, like, several decades, because it was just it was, like, so taxing on your body.
Like,
and stuff like that.
John Henry or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like some John Henry shit.
So when can people get the record when it comes out?
The record's going to be everywhere online. So it'll be on, like, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, all that stuff. If you want physical copies of it, it will be... You can order it from us via Bandcamp for CD or 180 gram vinyl. Or
cool, we got the 180 gram.
Yeah,
vinyl.
We did.
Nice.
We went for the audiophile.
Splurged
stuff. Very cool. and then it'll be in record stores in Austin. It'll be
like
at
Waterloo,
Exploded, Breakaway, End of an Ear, and then it'll be in other TBA. It'll be in some other Texas record stores in other cities, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, El Paso, Denton.
At the merch booth at your shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, of course.
And then it'll be in some other, like, cities that we've played a lot and stuff. Mm-hmm. It'll definitely be in Ithaca, New York at Angry Mom, and it'll be in New York City, and it'll be some other Northeast places we've played a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. I think most of it's digital these days, but there are people that still like the physical. It's just nice to go to a record store.
Yeah, of course.
So it's cool that you guys got vinyl. How many copies of the vinyl did you end up making?
500.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That'll be collectible.
Yeah. That will be.
How many, do you have any more tours set up, or are you planning to tour again this summer?
We're going to just be doing, like, weekend road shows this summer, we're just going to start hitting the South a lot, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to get to a lot of places in the South a couple times a year, mm-hmm. Starting this summer, and then, you know, we'll be doing... hopefully some more tours, you know, in the fall, and then like in the spring. So we'll do like
maybe some festivals. In the fall, spring.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully the record will give you some momentum. Maybe you can do some Europe shit. Have you guys gone overseas with this your gear setup?
We have the gear makes it difficult.
The whole time I was thinking about that. How would I shrink that down if I had to go to Europe?
We've kind of like joked about it. The best solution we come up with so far is like finding one of those ships that you can park a car on. And just literally driving on with our trailer and sailing. That's the best we could come up with. Yeah. Just because, like, drums we could find, but, like, electric vibraphone and electric marimba are, like, kind of niche and custom-made.
Yeah.
There are people that, like, check $200,000 cellos into a plane.
It's
luggage.
True.
Like, yeah. At some point, you just gotta, like, take a swallow and check that.
Maybe someday. We gotta find a way to safely transport
the
all
crates,
of that.
Crates. You just want to get those roadie crates, right?
Yeah.
But it'd have to be festival money to pay for creating that stuff and transporting it.
So if anyone in Europe is listening and wants to throw a couple thousand bucks our way, we'll gladly come over.
Yeah. I'm sure it would go like all that percussion at a festival. I'm sure it would fucking go over like gangbusters.
Yeah,
you know, festival crowds love anything that's just heavy groove, heavy percussion. To kind of like shake them out of the, you know, alt rock haze or whatever, the tempo stuff they've been listening to all day.
Yeah, right.
Well, I know you've got to get out of here, but I guess two of you. I was thinking maybe we'll try to do a little live something since we have the.
We have some toy percussion.
We try to encourage younger listeners to like just play with people. Like you're in a band, but play with strangers sometimes. So sure. I try to improv a little bit for every show, but let's take a little break first. Thank you guys so much for
coming.
Yeah,
thank
of course,
you, Chris. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Taylor. And
check out the Bandcamp for the record.
Pre-orders are up now. It's released on the 28th of this month.
And Andrew, wherever you are.
Thank you. We love you, man. We hope you're still alive.
Yeah.
You're out there. Call us.
And so thanks for listening.
And now the first track off of the Kraken Quartet's first album, Separate Migrate, Chance the Dog, the song. You can go get the Kraken Quartet's album on April 28th. It's available now for pre-order on Bandcamp. So get out there and take a listen to the Kraken Quartet.